Hey guys, I just wanted to reach out to you and let you know that Surewinder is still selling amazing products. Some of you guys have been dragging your feet for whatever reason. If your shoulder hurts, do not waste time. Pull the trigger. I just bought four or five of them, and we had two guys out. You know how much it cost me to pay for two guys being out with bad shoulders? We just pulled the trigger and we said, listen, everybody's going to have one on a truck. It's mandatory. You got to use it. Don't hesitate. Don't wait till your guys go down. It's going to cost you more. Buy a Surewinder.
What's up, everybody? This is Ryan, Torsion Talk Podcast. And today is going to be a good one. It's going to be a good one. I brought my competitor on, and we may be related. But before we get to that, I've got a couple announcements. Let me just share something with you. So if you haven't already, make sure you register for Garage Door U Summit. It's very easy. Go to garagedooru.com. Click this button here, GDU Summit 24 registration. Oh, listen, room, food, entertainment, education, everything's included. Consider it all inclusive if you have the all in. If you have the standard, you're going to get breakfast, lunch, and education. All the entertainment stuff will get left out for you. It helps you save a little money if you're on tight budget. But listen, I do entertainment so well that I believe that most people sign up just for the entertainment. And the education is life changing. It's going to be about leadership and culture. We're going to go on a Zappos tour, and you won't want to miss this. We basically rented out Zappos. We've got the head of culture giving us a tour, walking us through some of their core principles, how they run their business, how they have such a great culture, and going to give you a million ideas. When I'm telling you that they think the opposite of how most business owners think, it's so valuable because it'll stretch your mind and give you a different perspective. Also, if you want to join GDU, it's a mastermind. You can click here to apply. If you're on YouTube, you'll be able to see this. But go to garagedooru.com. You'll see three buttons on the homepage. And the bottom button is sales training. We have two sales trainings coming up. And one is at the very beginning of February. The dates are here. So you can just choose this drop down. February 1st and 2nd, March 21st and 22nd. We have some testimonials, some information about the training. Super simple and easy. The training will be at a hotel, so you can stay at the hotel and just walk downstairs and go to the training. There's a Starbucks in the hotel as well. It's Courtyard Marriott Mall of Georgia. So if you're interested, make sure to check that out. Did I miss anything, Jen?
That's it.
It was trainings. I thought there was one other thing. Trainings, GDU. We do have monthly webinars that are going to be, we've done two so far. They've been huge hits, gotten lots of positive feedback on them. They're totally free. So go to the website regularly, check if there'll be a button right there next to all the others that say monthly webinar. Click on that. We got one coming up in March with Mike Michalowicz, who wrote Profit First. It is amazing. He just wrote a book on leadership. I'm on a big kick for leadership right now, and I think it's super important that we all invest in ourselves. So that one is $19.99. That comes with a book that we're going to drop ship to your house. We have only a limited number of seats, so make sure that if you're interested, you go register for that. We'll have that more available and more on that closer to March. But we'll have another webinar this month and in February prior. So I think that's it. Got all that out of the way. So now we can move on to the special moment of the day. First of all, Jen, how are you?
I'm great. I'm great, Ryan. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. What, did you do anything fun, anything exciting for Christmas and New Year's?
Lots of family time. I have a big family. So we did a lot of eating and drinking and lots of sweets and presents and whatnot. And New Year's, went out for dinner with a huge group of friends. Good time.
Good. Now you have two kids, right? Son and daughter?
Yes. My oldest.
Like a superstar baseball player?
He's a great, solid baseball player, freshman this year. So he's got a lot of potential. He wants to play in college. And my daughter is a sophomore at Clemson University.
Yeah. Now, Jen used to live in Cumming and now lives in Chicago. So, well, actually, you live outside of Chicago.
Yeah, I live in Northwest Indiana, but I mean, Chicago's the closest big city.
Yeah, yeah.
Small town here.
So, you ever go over there to go shopping?
Once in a while. I mean, not good really. Shopping. It's good eating, good restaurants, good shopping, but.
There was a pizza joint that somebody took me to there. One of my clients. What was it? In Chicago. When I was working at Contact at Once, I used to have to do like day trips and stuff up there. And there was one pizza joint. I'm trying to remember the name of it.
That's what I figured it was. Giordano's.
Yeah, that was it. Oh my God. Pizza like I've never had in my life. And I love pizza. The crust on that thing was like this thick.
Yeah. I don't love that. I don't love the thick. I'm a thin crust pizza girl.
I like thin crust too, but I think at some point you got to have these different styles. And this
you got to try it.
Yeah, it was great. So yeah, yeah, I used to fly up to see cars.com and then I used to fly up to see apartments.com and they were both in Chicago. So, all right. Speaking of Contact at Once, being a software company, I used to have this annoying cousin who I met. Matter of fact, actually, let me go a little bit further back. I married into this family, right? Stephanie's cousins. One of the first impressions I had was going to a Christmas get together and being someone who's not musically inclined and it doesn't really have a big family and not a lot of big family get togethers. When I walked in, it was so much fun. And then at the end, they were like, "Hey, all right, let's all gather around." And they're grabbing their guitars and stuff. And I'm like, "What is about to happen right now?" And there was four or five guys. Can't remember exactly how many. And they started playing worship music and like Christmas music. And I just remember thinking, holy cow, these guys should be in a band together. because they were like on tune. Like it was one of the most beautiful moments of my life. Like I'll never forget it. I literally like felt like crying when I was there. It was so touching and moving. They're so freaking good at music. It was incredible. It was like getting a concert all by yourself, you know, with like five other people. And I just, I was blown away. And so, you know, I started building relationships with a few of them. And John, who's on the show today, he left shortly after to go on a long-term mission trip. And I think he asked me to be his mentor and I'm pretty sure I failed miserably at that. But nonetheless, he called me when he was ready to come home and was like, "Hey man, I need to find work." And I was working at a software company. And so believe it or not, people actually sometimes would take my recommendation on hiring people. And I was able to get John in. And John didn't really have a whole lot of experience, but he quickly moved up through the ranks and did a phenomenal job and made me look really good for recommending him, which is always a plus when you bring somebody in like that. And then I left and started Aaron Overhead Doors in 2015. And guess what this joker did? Jen, can you guess what he did?
He did not start a garage door company. No.
He did. But let me tell you this first. He calls me and says, "Hey, Ryan, what are you doing?" I remember him saying, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Bro, I'm selling garage doors." He's like, "I want to sell garage doors." I was like, no, you don't, bro. I said, this is like career suicide and you're on a fast growth. Like his growth trajectory was like this. Like he could have gone to a bunch of different software companies, moved up in the company, like all this stuff, right? I was like, bro, this is not a good idea for you. It's not. And I just heard from like, you know, a headhunter like that week who had called me and been like, hey, Ryan, I got a position for you. I heard you're no longer with Contact at Once, blah, blah, blah. And he had been recruiting me for years. He's like, I got this perfect position and it paid an astronomical amount of money. I told him, I was like, bro, I quit and started a garage door company. He's like, you did what? I was like, I quit and started a garage door company. And he's like, why? I was like, I'm not sure yet, but I'll let you know. And I started hearing all the chatter about how it's career suicide and I'm throwing away a great career with great income. And John follows and comes to work for me to Aaron Overhead Doors. And we were working out of a co-working space in Sugar Hill, Georgia. And he picked it up. He's really smart. So you only got to tell him usually one thing. You only got to tell him once. And he just picks it up and he's great with people. People love him. He's got that charismatic, you know, feel about him. And so he, John, our old CEO at the software company, calls me up and he says, hey, Ryan, he said, out of respect, I wanted to call you. I'm no longer with Contact at Once. I'm with another company and I'd like to recruit John. And I knew that John was like, could do whatever he wanted to. Like selling garage doors probably isn't his future. And so at least for Aaron Overhead Doors. So I gave John permission. I told him that I appreciated his respect for asking. And he called John and offered him significantly more money than he was making with me. And John made the right decision, I believe, and went to go work with him. And I mean, this company got acquired by Carvana later, and then John skyrocketed through the ranks of Carvana, had a successful career, if you don't mind me sharing, had a little bit of a health issue, backed out of that, and has now started a garage door company in our backyard. And it's an incredible story. I wouldn't say our backyard. He's like an hour away.
45 miles.
45 miles, an hour and a half in Atlanta. But there's very few people in the world that I would say I love more than John. Like I genuinely love watching him succeed. He is extremely intelligent and successful at just about everything he tries. And so it's fun watching him. Sometimes even he probably feels it. I get frustrated because I'm trying to drive this behemoth and he's in the startup phase, which is my favorite part of starting businesses. And it's like part of me is jealous because I want to be in the startup phase again and maybe do things very different than what I did. But nonetheless, it's the most exciting part of owning a business is those first 3 or 4 years, the exhilarating portion of, am I going to make it, you know? They say, 50% of companies don't make it within the first 4 years or 5 years. And then 50% of those don't make it past 8. So, you know, amazingly, it's probably been the roughest 8-year stretch between getting sued by one of the largest garage door companies in the industry 6 months after starting A-holes. And then, we also had COVID a couple years later. And then, you know, now we're dealing with the economy the way it is. So I'm on this whole kick right now where I'm trying to help startups and I love startups. And because I don't have a startup anymore, I'm giving back to startups and I want to talk about startups. And I think there's a couple things, and I relate this to like Christianity as well as like startup companies. You start a company, you get super excited, you're having lots of fun, you take a couple punches in the mouth, and then as it becomes more mature, the excitement kind of wears off. So I think it's important that we remember where we came from and why we started the company. And I feel like this is a great way for us to do this with people who want to start a company, people who just started a company, and people who have been in business for 30, 40 years, to just bring back that, this is why I did it. And I remember the golden days, you know? So John with Mainline, Riverline Door, right?
Riverline Garage Doors.
Riverline Garage Doors.
Yep.
And we're going to interview him today, talk a little bit about the garage door startup life and what's going on and some of the things he's done that's helped him be so successful. So, John, when did you start Riverline?
Yeah, so we started the project. I believe we filed the paperwork July 5th. So I had, between Carvana and this, I like you mentioned, I did have a health scare, which was just a tough thing for my family to go through in general. And took a step out of the high pressure job I was in, went to another tech startup, and honestly, things were good. I liked the leadership. I got it through a network of trusted individuals. It was going well, but I just didn't feel like I could be as effective in that space. Just felt like I wasn't able to really ring the bell. So I was discontent and spent some time really thinking about what it is I wanted to do next and evaluated a bunch of businesses. And inclusive of tattoo shops, by the way, which I may still do.
Nice.
I may still start a chain of tattoo shops.
I'm ready to get started on mine, by the way.
Start one. I'll give you great deals, man. I'll only charge you 98% of retail.
Very smart.
But
first lesson of starting your own business, don't give discounts to family and friends.
That gets out of control fast. But just wasn't connecting there. And so I was looking at things. And the thing where I felt like I had the most autonomy and where I was at in my headspace, where I just felt like I could get going on my own, be my own man. I knew the trade. I knew it well, was garage doors. So of the businesses I was evaluating, that one made the most sense for where we were at in our life and our family at that time. So we started the project in July. Took the first 3 or 4 weeks to just get everything up and running. You and all of the minutiae, right? Just creating all the stuff you need just to have something to offer a customer. And then we opened to the public August 1st. So I believe December makes what, October, August, September, October, November, December. We've been open to the public for 5 full months at this point.
Crazy. 5 months.
Gone by fast.
It does go by really fast, especially when you're in the garage turning wrenches and winding springs. So why garage doors? You could probably follow some type of music career potentially and make a little money. You could be super successful in software, multiple different roles. And you said, nope, I'm not going to do any of those. Secure living and software, great income. We're gonna not do that. We're gonna do garage doors.
Well, one thing is I don't have the same outlook on the software career that people around me seem to have for me. When I look out at software careers, I don't see the same bright horizons that those around me who told me I committed career suicide doing this. I don't see the same future. I see a lot of positives for the trades. There's less labor entering, a lot of labor leaving. People are becoming more dependent on home services as they don't know how to work on their own homes more and more. And they're not trained that as they grow up in families. As families use service industries more, they lose those skills. I think that the home services industry has a lot of promise. Now, I'll go ahead and tell you, I never think that this company is going to command the type of valuations or multiples that a software company would traditionally command. But that said, I see a lot of turbulence in the future for the software industry, and I just wasn't interested in weathering that storm. I was burning out of it. I needed a break in general. And I think the other thing I like about this is it appeals to something in me where if I need it to be, I can just be very autonomous. Worst comes to worst, you can scale it down and you can make a living working on your own or with a very small crew. And that was attractive to me, that it could be one thing or the other, especially at a time where I was just kind of getting over all of the navigating the corporate dynamics and thinking about what that was going to look like for my career long term. So I love the simplicity of it. I love the autonomy of it. But I also think it has a lot more promise than home services companies used to have, given the trends in the economy right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's good. I tried to scale it like a software company when I first started. I was a little under the gun. I didn't have a huge nest egg, but I did have a small one. And I knew I had to make a certain amount of money in a short amount of time to be able to pay myself and support our family. My wife was a stay-at-home mom, so it was a one-income family. And I didn't have a choice. I had to grow like super fast.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
I mean, we went from zero to 700,000 our first 12 months. And I will honestly say the first 2 or 3 months off of 1 week of training, I really didn't know what I was doing yet. So I can sell, and I did sell, and I was very good at selling. But the problem was I lacked the people to do the work. So we ran into some cash flow issues at the beginning of our second year. I think I've mentioned that on the podcast before. And there's like cycles where I feel like this kind of rears its ugly head. Sometimes you have that cash flow crunch. And I think it happens in a lot of different businesses, but I've only ever really owned two companies kind of that have exceeded kind of the 1 million mark where cash flow might be an issue. And so experiencing that is very difficult when you're going super fast. And although I remember, John, when you and I spoke, you were like, yeah, I'm going to take it slow. We're not going to grow really fast. And, you know, I'm not trying to be like you and your company size. Like, I just want to be the guy, you know, like I want to make a decent living and turn some wrenches and have a good time. So that changed. I mean, it's only been five months and that changed. He texted me like, I'm going for 100 G's a month, bro. I'm like, whatever happened to the original plan? That was funny.
I think I still like the fact that I can just be the guy. And right now, a lot of that, that's what it is. So I have a very small team. There's two other individuals on the team that we do work with. But I enjoy very much being in the garage, doing the work, making the customer impact. It's a lot of fun. One of the things that dawned on me really quickly was that I also just absolutely enjoy business in general. So I kind of had lost touch with that in the last role I was in. I didn't have the global oversight I was used to. I wasn't, I was just a lot more pigeonholed in that role. And so I just kind of got dull for about 9 or 10 months from now, like using my brain. When that all flipped back on, right? So when I started the company up and all of a sudden started having to make decisions, solve problems, kind of that training that I had received about how to build and grow and forecast and execute against goals, it kind of kicked back in, woke that back up in me. And then from there, it was looking at it and saying, well, realistically, what is possible here with the resources we have? And as I started to work backwards on the math, I started arriving at some goals that were pretty interesting and exciting. And so right now, yeah, you're right. The goal is to grow in our first 12 months to be at a run rate of 1.2 per year. So a lot different than where we started, but feels achievable. And we're having a ton of fun.
What did I tell you?
People behind us.
What did I tell you?
You told me that it wasn't going to last. You told me that I was going to get a bigger vision. You were right. I was wrong.
Yeah. It's all right. I appreciate it. I do have it recorded that you said I was right. That might be the first time in our relationship, but nonetheless, it's like my wife.
You've wrestled me into admitting it at least once or twice. I've usually done it under duress. Yeah.
I think I even tried to tell you, don't start a garage door company. It's not... Like when you look at like all the different businesses you could start, right? It's not the most profitable. It's one of the dysfunctional businesses, like the most dysfunctional businesses you could start. you think about all the troubles you have with the manufacturers and the quality control. You got to get the product to you. Then you got to store it where it doesn't get damaged. You got to take it to the job site without damaging it. You got to offload it, unpackage it, install it, and then pray to God when the customer walks out, they're like, that's not what I wanted, right? And so you have all these things that take place. And I say quite often, like, I probably wouldn't start a garage door company if I were to know everything I know now about the garage door, like the complications, especially with the manufacturers and some of the bullies in the industry that sue people that are 6 months old for nothing, right? But when you fast forward and you look at it, I mean, we wouldn't have the podcast. I probably wouldn't have started a marketing agency, or I would have started a marketing agency prior to starting the garage door company. But I probably wouldn't be focused on garage doors. Wouldn't have GDU. So it's been good to me, right? Like, in the grand scheme of things. But when you're looking for a company that's like, doesn't have recurring revenue, doesn't have the best profits, doesn't really have that great of support from manufacturers, hard to find people, right? I mean, why would you choose these? Hey guys, I found something that changed my business and I want to share it with you. We've created packages that have included some of the best products in our industry to offer our service customers. The heart of that package is Stealth Hardware Kit. Stealth Hardware is the quietest hinges on the market. I challenge you to buy at least one of these, test it for yourself. Put it on your truck and design a quiet performance package for your customers willing to pay for a better, smoother running door. Buy your Stealth Hardware Kit at Service Spring. Do a search for quiet hinge and then buy that. You can buy a double or single door, 7 or 8 foot tall, and promise you, it'll change your service forever.
Somer USA and Somer Group want to thank you for an incredible year and the trust you put in them and their products. As you know, Somer places high value on relationships, education, customer service, innovation, and professionalism. And they are grateful to you for your part in the fostering and dissemination of these values. If there is any way Somer can support you in your journey, whether through their products, the values they hold to, or the knowledge Somer has gained through interaction with door dealers across the world, please reach out to the team at your convenience. They are here to serve you. Again, thank you from the entire Somer team. Check them out at SomerUSA.com. Tell them Ryan sent you.
So I think similar to you, garage doors are not forever for me in terms of like my primary focus. I think very similar to you, how you've expanded your portfolio. I see a similar future for me. Like, there are other things I want to do. Tattoo shop is one of them. I love the idea of having two or three well-known and respected shops around the area. And I love tattoo artists because they're really, really good at what they do. They're typically incredibly creative marketers, and that's why they're able to drive so much word of mouth, use social media as they do.
Yeah.
But they oftentimes, in my experience, lack in some of the business acumen that would help them really unleash. And I think if you partner up well, that could be really exciting. I have some other ideas as well, but I think one thing that I've become really attracted to is just building good businesses. So like, if you hang around with entrepreneurs all the time, it's not going to take long for the talking head that tells you to go and shoot for the moon to emerge to the front. We all love the guys in the industry, whatever industry it is, who sell this huge vision. You can do it too. Look at my huge house. Look at the boats I have. I've done all this and so can you. Well, I think that that's really motivating. I read all their books. I listen to their podcast. It's great. I also think that there's something to be said for the value of just running a good cash flowing business that's an asset for you and your family. And so I don't think garage doors are going to like explode my net worth. But what I do think is I'm going to build a healthy, EBITDA positive, cash flowing company that's going to give me the flexibility to do some other things And it's going to be an investment that I can count on and have a level of control over it that other assets that I invest in, I don't have. So it scratches some itches for me on that front. The other thing is I think you have to decide really where you're trying to go. And for me, I've really sat down and evaluated, and I love the idea of being really local. When I think about the types of businesses I want to create, I love the idea of local businesses, homegrown businesses, like from the ground up. A business like this, if you do it right, completely integrates you into your community. In 5 months of doing this, the relationships I have, the connections I have, who I know in our community, the local government has blossomed. And it's going to open a lot more doors for me. So I think it's attractive because it's a piece of the puzzle that I'm building. I'm 32. I have my entire career to build. And so this is just the step I'm on right now. It accomplishes the goals I need and will enable the next thing. And we'll just keep building from there. But that's the frame that I look at it through.
Yeah. I think you brought up a good point, right? Well, one of my goals when starting Aaron Overhead Doors was I wanted to have five streams of income in 5 years. And I've seen too many people put all their eggs in one basket and then, you know, that basket collapses and it not work well. And other people will say, well, you're doing too many things, so you can't be great at any of them, right? And maybe I'm not, right? Maybe I'm not great at any of them. But one thing that I do is I hire amazing people to run things. And the challenge with that, if I have a singular focus, is how do I make a great living and then pay someone else to run my company if I only have one thing, right? Where people would be shocked to know, you know, I only make like $50,000, $60,000 a year through my door company, right? Like $4 million company and I make 50 grand a year ish, 60 maybe.
I have paid myself since we started. And when I say paid myself, I have transferred out of the account on two occasions, a total of $2,500 since we started. I could tell you there are people around me who are like, how much money are you making? Because they see the prices on the quotes, or, you know, I'm transparent about my metrics. I like my team to be excited about our goals. But there, unless you've seen a P&L, unless you've actually sat down and worked through the economics, everybody thinks the owner makes more money than they do. Right. Yeah. It's a lot tighter and a lot more interesting how the finances actually shape up than I think people get a credit for.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait till you have a warehouse, 10,000 square foot warehouse. You got a bunch of trucks. And once you get into having a fleet, then the shift of employee efficiency becomes like super important. And you got to weigh out, like, you know, if you have a truck that doesn't have anything to do for 2 hours, or they waste time on a job site, like that eats straight into your net profit. And you do that enough in a week or a month or a year, and all of a sudden you go from, you know, a healthy 10, 12, 15% down to 4, 5, 6% net profit. And all these people, like, you know, employees are like, you know, oh, he's grinding us so hard, like whatever. But honestly, it's really about efficiency. It's all about efficiency. And if we're not efficient, then we won't be profitable. And so you got to have that profit mindset. And I think if you have good employees, they buy into that. But I want to go back to one thing before we get too deep into that, is the investor mindset. Like, I love that mindset. Because if you go into your business thinking this is an investment for me and my family, I feel like that's a much healthier place to be than any other place. Because it's like, if I'm an investor, what is the one big rule of investment? Diversification, right? You want to diversify. You don't want to put all your investment dollars into Bitcoin or, you know, Tesla. Like, you can have majority if you wanted, but you definitely want to diversify. So I look at business the same way. I think you should invest in it and diversify and stop looking at trying to be number one, because you don't win a trophy. And if you promote your number one to your customers, it's the stupidest thing ever, in my opinion, because nobody really cares that you sold more garage doors than anybody else. But
couldn't agree more.
What are the measurable metrics of a successful business? In my opinion, a measurable metrics has to be, if not the most important, net profit, health, like measurable, right? And then you go off of non-measurable, and it's probably culture and company structure. So those would be the two things that I would say are probably how I would measure a successful company. And I honestly don't feel like total revenue means jack squat if those two aren't in place first.
I think it's a matter of where you are but the objective of a business is to make money. Like, that's why we're in it. And I love the way you say it, like the investor mindset. When I buy stock, I don't have an emotional connection to that stock. Like, I don't, if I go out and I buy 100 shares of any company, I'm buying it on the assumption that it's going to perform the way I want. Either I'm shorting it or I'm long on it. I've done analysis, I've made some bets, and now I'm taking a position and watching how it pans out with hard ins and hard outs. I look at my business the same way. When you're in it every day, when I get in the truck, I have a ritual I go through. So the last 2 minutes before I get to a customer's house, I turn my phone off, everything. No more calls, no more texts. And I go through a get ready mindset of I'm showing up at a customer's house. This person has the capacity to refer me to all their friends and family, or they have the capacity to one star me on Google and really hurt me. It's going to come down to how I perform for the next 2 hours while I'm at their house. And I get ready and I get there and I do the job. When I'm in that mindset, I believe in the vision. Riverline Garage Doors is everything. We offer a great customer experience. We offer excellent warranties. We feel that our prices are competitive and fair. We have standardized pricing structures that just help us walk in and be very transparent, very candid, very convenient. When I leave, come back and get in my office, I have to take off the visionary hat and I have to stop believing in the business so much and stop believing in the vision. And I have to put on my analyst hat and say, is the business actually healthy? Like, where are we at and what are the priorities? So like for us right now, net profit is not the top priority. I can tell you that we watch our P&L super tight. I can tell you what the net profits are month over month. Keep a close eye on cash flow. We have tools to like manage our liability and risk that we forecast out 30, 60, 90 days. That said, the primary focus right now is to grow brand awareness, top line, et cetera. So what that means is the most important thing we can be doing is investing in our customer experience as much as we possibly can, all while taking the time to be learning where our cost centers are and what it's going to take to drive profitability once we've gotten some brand efficiency when we're deeper into the market, maybe a year, year and a half, 2 years out. And then like to build on something you said earlier as well, and like just thinking about it, because I talk with a lot of entrepreneurs. It's amazing once you start a business, people who want to start a business or have started a business, they all start flocking towards each other because they're like, you're also struggling with this, let's chat. I think the other thing as well is talking to other small business owners. Oh, I lost my train of thought, but I'll wrap it up. But talking to other small business owners and saying like, realistically, where do I want my goals to be? How fast do I want to get there? And what's achievable? Have a realistic game plan for that. Like if it's going to take you 2 years to hit profitability, you better have some runway in the bank. Or you can do like me, like I'm not in your situation. Me and my wife have been planning starting a business for like, since we met. I told her on our first date, I'm going to start a business. So my wife went through grad school. She got her nurse practitioner's degree. Now she's working full time. That gives me the ability to step back and I don't need the income or have to pull cash out of the business because we've kept our life super small, super efficient, so that we're able to go do this without having to like run into a whole bunch of investments or savings or other things that would otherwise be runway. So I think that's the other thing, like be reasonable about the types of things you can accomplish and the timelines you can accomplish them in.
Are you say that you're not super profitable. You don't have like a huge warehouse and a bunch of overhead. So I imagine you're probably investing money back into the business for growth purposes.
Correct.
Okay. What are some of the ways you're doing that? I think that's an important topic and one that not a lot of people talk about as far as like, you know, what if you're gonna try and grow your startup, where do you put your profits in order for you to grow?
Yeah. So the first thing was I first put my profits back in my customers' pockets for the first few months. And I priced everything really aggressively. So I knew that my P&L was going to come out really trashy because I was pricing really aggressively. All I wanted to do was just win business as fast as I could because I wanted reviews and I wanted word of mouth. Now, once we started to get past like 20, 25 Google reviews, we started getting more word of mouth. We started getting more like organic traffic in. We started bringing our prices up towards healthier gross profit margins. So we started coming out of bottom of the barrel pricing into healthier pricing. By no means are we top of the market, but we're at a point now where if you do some research on like where your P&L should be, we're within striking distance of pricing where we need to be ongoing. So the first thing was I gave my profits back to my customer by not collecting them with cheaper prices. Now that I'm raising my prices because we've got that momentum, we have a lot of people who are expressing confidence in the brand. I heard about you. I saw your reviews. I watched all your Instagram videos, whatever it is. Prices are going up. Now what we're doing is we're adding layers to the marketing onion and we're collecting data. So for instance, we started off with just Angie's. That's the fastest to get to. Okay. Now I've got about 5 months of really good attribution data on Angie's. Okay. Then we got Google going, got the Google Business Profile, advanced verification, dear Lord in heaven, getting the advanced verification. I literally thought like, this is the piss. I think I texted you, Google is the devil, because I was like, no. I just can't figure out how to navigate.
They literally took the person that gives me the wrong order through the drive-through every single time. And they put them in charge of approving your advanced verification.
Exactly. So we got the advanced verification. So then we could do PPC. So now we got pay-per-click. Also, we have SEO going. Okay, so now we've gotten some growth from that. We're starting to collect data there. Then we started all of our social media campaigns, started getting attribution data from that. Then we launched the postcards. And so what we're doing is we're just adding layers. And then what we're doing is keeping a lot of those costs flat. So once we take on that advertising cost, we leave it there, and then we make incremental adjustments to it based on the performance month over month. But we just keep adding more layers. So our marketing attribution spreadsheet is growing, but we're able to dial in down to net profit exactly where all the dollars we're getting are coming from. So what that's going to help us do is collect a bunch of data, do a bunch of analysis, and figure out where things should be, both in terms of seasonality and in terms of lead source. We also track the types of jobs we do, like what components are going in, what types of work are getting done. So we know what we didn't touch so we can go back and farm. But we're keep adding layers. And so coming into next year, once we've collected all this data, we'll start shifting into optimization phase where we'll say, okay, where are we losing on these channels and how can we start to squeeze out incremental gains? But right now we're looking for those explosive pops. So like, how can I turn on an extra $2,000 of spend and flip out another $10,000 to $20,000 of revenue? And then more valuable than that, how can I get that data in, start structuring it and hosting it in my own world so that I can analyze it repeatedly and begin seeing trends over time?
Yeah, that's good. All great advice from someone who's done marketing almost my whole life. I think that's a great approach. I'm curious about the spreadsheet. Did you find something online or just build it from scratch?
I kind of took some, so I have several tools that I use. One of them is a forecasting method. So a lot of this is what I learned in corporate. One of them is a forecasting method I used called stagger forecasting. You can look up stagger forecasting. Basically what you do is you have a grid, right? So going across your y-axis and x-axis, you have the same months, January, February, March, April, right? And then what you do is at the start of a month, you forecast what you think you're going to get, and then you forecast the next 2 months. Then at the end of the month, at the beginning of the next month, you come back and beneath that in bold, you put in what you actually got, and then you forecast out the next 3 months. And it begins to build a pattern where you can see as you move downwards, how close you're getting to your forecast. And it's a tool that'll show you like, and so as you come to that tool, you're bringing a lot of stuff with you, your marketing analysis, your future spend and what you're expecting to get off of that, your current customer base, your sales pipeline, those types of things. And you come up with real-time market-informed forecasts. That's one tool to use. Another tool we use is I love creating really plug and play spreadsheets. So I created them myself. So I found where I could get the data points I wanted out of my CRM the fastest. So the reports they already gave me. Most CRMs are done by, or created, in my opinion.
Which CRM did you use?
We're using Jabber.
Good choice.
And I love about them is that their engineering department. So I did a bunch of like SQL and analytics in my previous role. So I love getting into data querying. I can't query.
This garage door guy calling us, telling us we need to change some code in an area.
No, this is the beauty of it. They've done such a great job because they literally just dump out their tables. So all of their reports are literally just the most customer relevant columns from, you can tell how their DB structure is designed. So I just go through, grab what I need, and then I bring it over. Now this won't scale forever, but for now it works perfect because I can just go take the raw data and bring it over. But what I do is I have highlighted fields. So I want my top line revenue. I want my sales revenue. I want my number of requests or like customer visits, my number of jobs. Like there are KPIs that I develop that measure the overall success. I update those, and then I created templated equations throughout the spreadsheet that spit out the rest of the KPIs I care about. So marketing as percent of top line revenue versus percent of top line sales, fixed cost as a percent of revenue. It just spits it all out. So reporting once a month is just 5 minutes of data entry, and then it spits it all out. I have all the graphs built in there, and then I can get to analyzing.
Nice. So important to track what you're doing. So you have, I think what's like what we can learn from that is, I think if you set all this up in the very beginning, it's much more beneficial than trying to do it later. Like it's a lot more effective.
In the first 60 or 70 days, I realized clean data was going to be one of the key things. So I was spending money on marketing channels and just testing feedback. And then I was like, all right, I need to go back and just do attribution. So I track two custom fields on everything I do, lead source. And then the other custom field that I track is job type. So I want to know if I just put a garage door in or if I put a garage door and an opener in. And I know for every customer I've touched, whether I just fixed it, whether I just serviced it, what components I put in. So we can farm that later.
Yeah.
But you want to have all this data. And one of the things that helped me do is it helped me avoid a huge mistake. I was thinking Instagram was a waste of money for marketing. I was busier doing Angie's work. I was busier answering Google calls. Well, then I ran an analysis once I got all my attribution cleaned up, and I realized Instagram was my most efficient marketing channel. So I like poured some gas on that fire, and it went better. And so now we're toying around with that and figuring out how to like get more out of that. But if you don't have attribution, you'd be amazed what your gut will tell you is right. That if you're actually optimizing for, like, if you're actually like looking at what's going to get you to your goals, your gut may be totally wrong. You could be shooting yourself in the foot, and data doesn't have emotions.
Yep. Agree. Such a good podcast. I feel like we could talk for hours. We're wrapping up on 45 minutes now, and like there's so much more we could talk about, but I'm freaking so proud of you, dude. Like what you chose to do and, you know, get into the garage door industry, you're going to make the industry better. I know that you're going to be successful. I know that. And I know that this is going to be good for you. The outlet of going in garages and connecting with people and meeting new people is as exciting for you as it is for me. And unfortunately, I don't get to do that much anymore, but I love working with entrepreneurs even more than that. And so it's nice to sit down and chat with you. I know we had, we got together at a family's house over the holidays, Christmas Day. We all get together and we got to chatting, and it was good. It's just good catching up with you, bro. And, you know, I feel like there's so much that I could learn from you already. And you've only been doing it for a short amount of time.
And don't come learn anything from me, man. We're just figuring it out here.
It's not just the practical things that I can learn. It's also observing the excitement and energy that you put out, right? We all go into the world with this you know, rah, rah, we're excited, we're going to take on the world. And then, you know, like I said earlier, we get kicked in the teeth and we start to lose that a little bit. And I kind of realized that earlier last year, and I've made some changes in my life to try to help make that better. And so I'm excited about 2024. I know it's going to be a little bit of a roller coaster ride for everybody involved, but we're committed, we're hungry. I got a good game plan, and I'm excited about the future. So thanks for coming on the podcast, bro.
Yeah, this has been enjoyable.
Yeah. So for those of you guys who are starting out or just want to start your own garage door company, hit me up on Facebook. Happy to chat with you, provide any information I can provide. I'm going to be starting a GDU startup group that is, I'm still developing it, and it's going to be priceless. Like, we're going to walk you through the startup phase, everything you need, the resources you need. Maybe I'll get with John and see if he'd be willing to share his tracking sheet so we can implement those. I think that would be super valuable. But all of these things are like a lot to think about when you think about starting a company. So we're going to try and make it easy for you. And if you're interested, hit me up on Facebook. We're going to be getting a waiting list going here shortly on garagedooru.com and taking people to put on the wait list for the startup program. I'm really excited about this because this is a great way for me to be involved and help out and help grow your company with the information that I've learned, the do's, the don'ts, the mistakes, the great things I've done. You're going to get it all. I'm going to share everything with you. So if you're interested, hit me up on Facebook, Ryan Lucia, and I'll be glad to get you started on that. We haven't started it yet. It'll launch in probably Q2 or Q3, but we're excited to get started. So with that, have a blessed day. Be safe. And if you haven't already, register for GDU Summit.